You're listening to the Counter Tobacco Podcast. Let's talk about gas stations. An odd topic, right? Gas stations aren't normally the focal point of conversations unless something's happening to gas prices, but that's not what this episode is about. I want you to think about the last gas station you stopped at. Maybe it was time to fill up your car or the child in your backseat needed to go to the bathroom. The details don't really matter. Just think about it in broad terms. What do you see? For starters, you probably see the all-important gas pumps, cars, people. And behind the pumps, a building bearing a name, Exxon, BP, Mobil, Speedway, you get the idea. Maybe you went into the building to use the restroom or get some food. You probably didn't spend a whole lot of time inside. That's the whole point of these stores, after all, to be a quick, one-stop shop for consumers no matter the time of day. You were probably out the door at the same rate you came driving in. We don't spend a lot of time at gas stations and don't give our visits to them much thought. Oftentimes the trip is just too insignificant to remember. It's rare that someone's life changes in the parking lot of a Wawa in Pennsylvania. But it can, as hard as it is to believe. I told you to think broadly about that last trip for a reason. I wanted you to think about the primary parts of a gas station, like the physical structures and the main products sold. Now I want you to think about all the little details inside that building that really help define gas stations as we know them today. Junk food, alcohol, lottery tickets, and above all, tobacco products. Those are all things that you definitely know are there, but like gas stations themselves, have slipped your mind over the years because it's just a part of life. I mean, how often do you go into a gas station that isn't plastered in tobacco advertisements? Not too often, huh? It's a culture that's been created, so much so that you come to expect to see those brand names every time you pull into a parking lot.
You're traveling through another dimension, a dimension not only of sight and of sound, but of point of sale. It's a dimension as vast as the main office at 120 Park, and as eternal as an evening spent trying to download your PowerBook. It's the middle ground between light and shadow, and it lies between the pit of a rep's fears and the summit of success. This is the dimension where the battle for brand is won or lost. It's an area which we call the POS zone.
Point-of-sale advertising at places like gas stations is in no way a new thing for the tobacco industry. Tobacco companies have advertised their product in stores for years, but the strategy never really had the chance to live up to its full potential, thanks to television and radio.
You've come a long way, baby, to get where you got to today.
Those were the hot commodities during the 20th century, and the industry put all its time and money into saturating the airwaves with their products until 1971, when tobacco ads were banned from the mediums altogether. As a result, tobacco companies shifted their focus to public ads like billboards and began branching into event sponsorships and product placement.
NBC News in depth tonight, the war on big tobacco in this country, the attacks on smoking and cigarette makers are getting increasingly aggressive. Now the tobacco companies are fighting back even more aggressively. What's at stake here? Tobacco is a huge business, of course, $4 billion this year alone. This despite the fact that smoking rates are going down dramatically from more than 40% of the American population in 1965 to 25% this year. And this week, the battle heated up considerably thanks to a new key player who could spell big trouble for big tobacco. We begin our in-depth reporting tonight with NBC's Bob Kerr.
Why have so many tobacco company lawyers descended on a small Mississippi town?
Anybody from the tobacco companies want to talk to us?
It's because this man, Jeffrey Wigand, is the closest thing to a smoking gun in the tobacco war. Wigand is a former vice president of tobacco giant Brown & Williamson, which sued to stop him from revealing company secrets. It didn't work. Mississippi believes companies like Brown & Williamson know their product is dangerous. To make their case, the state subpoenaed Wigand and asked him about alteration or falsification of business records by Brown & Williamson, research on addictive effects of tobacco products, and false or misleading testimony or evidence provided to federal investigators. Mississippi Attorney General Mike Moore predicts Wigand's testimony will be devastating.
He was an insider for 4 years. He knows where the bodies are buried.
Tobacco companies have never been in a fight like this with so many battlefronts. Critics are getting more aggressive. More states are taking tobacco to court for an industry that spends as much as $600 million a year on legal bills. This week is costing a lot. Tobacco lawyers went to court in Massachusetts and Texas, trying to block both states from suing to force tobacco companies to pay medical bills for smoking-related health care. Maryland plans a similar attack.
These are big guys. They're probably the toughest people to take on. They've got one thing that we don't have, lots of money.
They are using the high-powered law firms and the courts to try to intimidate people from opposing or raising questions.
So far, it's worked. Only a handful of states have been willing to take on tobacco. Will courts now side with states who claim they shouldn't be saddled with smoking-related medical bills? Tobacco says no.
Yeah, I don't want to use the word extort, but I guess that's what it really amounts to. $1 billion from the tobacco industry and tobacco companies.
In spite of years of growing public animosity, tobacco has never lost a case or paid a cent in more than 700 lawsuits claiming health damage from smoking. 65-year-old Curtis Lamar, who suffers from emphysema and lung cancer, says they should pay.
My life's over. They have ruined my life.
Anti-tobacco activists pin their hopes on Jeffrey Wigand, the tobacco whistleblower. If his story is as damaging as some believe, critics think it will be a turning point.
They will do whatever it takes to protect their interests, to allow them to sell their deadly wares.
The latest attack, plus the federal government considering regulating tobacco as a drug, give opponents their best chance yet to dent big tobacco's armor. Bob Kerr, NBC News, Bethesda, Maryland.
But all this changed in 1994 when the state of Mississippi sued the largest tobacco manufacturers under state consumer protection and antitrust laws. Other states continued, and by 1997, over 40 had taken legal action against the tobacco companies. They were all going by the same claim. The cigarettes produced by these tobacco companies were creating health problems in each state, which increased the cost of that state's public health system by a significant amount. Mississippi's general attorney at the time, Mike Moore, described the situation best back in 1994. You cause the health crisis, you pay for it. And the tobacco manufacturers did, sort of. On November 23, 1998, the manufacturers agreed to a settlement with the states, which is known as the Master Settlement Agreement. Under this agreement, states are no longer entitled to make legal claims based on the tobacco company's action. In return, participating companies are to annually compensate the states for any taxpayer money spent on tobacco-related healthcare costs. On top of that, companies must also oblige to new standards and restrictions set on the sale and marketing of their tobacco products. That meant no more public ads, event sponsorships, and product placement in movies and TV. The Master Settlement Agreement also banned tobacco companies from using cartoon characters in any of their advertising, so no more Joe Camel. At first glance, it seems like the tobacco companies were left with nothing to work with, but that was not the case. Enter point-of-sale advertising, which had been quietly waiting years for its time to shine. Tobacco companies realized how underutilized it had been and decided this would be their new advertising strategy. Since then, the tobacco industry has devoted much of their time and money into point-of-sale advertising. In 2014, $8.2 billion were spent on it. This included anything from interior and exterior store ads, the Powerwall of products behind registers, price discounts and promotions, and product placement strategies. Gas stations and convenience stores became hotspots for tobacco advertisements, thanks to how accessible they are to a large amount of the population. As of 2017, there are over 154,000 convenience stores in the United States. 15,000 of them are in Texas alone.
Smokers are bombarded by cigarette promotions when they walk into stores. The phrase, "it's a jungle out there," truly describes what smokers encounter at retail. For years, we've been searching for new and dynamic ways to cut through the clutter and make consumers notice our brands.
So what is point-of-sale advertising by the tobacco industry? Lots of things. It buys brand loyalty and preference from new and old customers alike. Smokers tend to stay faithful to the same brand over the years, and nothing feels better than seeing your favorite out on display for all to see. It also buys cravings from established smokers, which can result in unprompted purchases that will go on to hinder any current and future attempts at quitting smoking. But most importantly, it buys the attention of young children.
Here's a question for you. What would you say to your children if they began smoking cigarettes? Well, nearly one out of every eight kids is lost in smoke or has smoked cigarettes in the past week. Kids are starting to smoke at a much younger age, and with the tobacco industry bombarding children with positive images of smoking, parents and teachers are having a tough job convincing children not to smoke.
The tobacco industry claims that they do not market their products to children, but evidence shows that tobacco point-of-sale ads are more likely to be at stores that adolescents frequent, especially in low-income and higher-percent minority communities. This is done intentionally, as a means to increase a child's exposure to the products, which will in turn expand their chances of smoking. This exposure is also used as a way to distort youth perceptions about tobacco's availability and popularity in the world. The young people of today are incredibly important to the tobacco industry, as they are the generation that will determine if the industry will continue to succeed. This importance was highlighted in a memo sent from an R.J. Reynolds executive in 1998, who said, "Younger adults are the only source of replacement smokers. If younger adults turn away from smoking, the industry must decline, just as the population which does not give birth will eventually dwindle." Much is being done by tobacco control advocates to try and ultimately win the war in the store. One of their main goals is to pass policy solutions that will help to combat the influence of point-of-sale marketing. There are a ton of solutions, including increasing tobacco prices and restricting tobacco retailer density, especially in school zones. Some of these policies have begun to gain traction in mainstream news. Within the past year, Hawaii, California, and New Jersey became the first states to raise the legal age to purchase tobacco from 18 to 21. Many major cities like Boston, Chicago, and New York have also raised the legal age. And in 2014, CVS made the decision to stop selling tobacco products, making them the first national pharmacy chain to do so. This decision has inspired many privately owned pharmacies to do the same. All of these efforts have been applauded by members of the anti-tobacco community, as they are major steps in policy change that aim at a tobacco-free world. That was this week's episode on The War in the Store. For more information on point-of-sale tobacco advertising, visit countertobacco.org. This episode was written, edited, and produced by Lindsay Miller. The Counter Tobacco Podcast is a project of the 501c3 nonprofit organization, Counter Tools. Our mission is to provide software and consulting services to catalyze place-based public health at the local and state level. Find out more at countertools.org.